this is John Amato from Crooks and Liars, and I am joined by the great movie maker, Mr. Michael Moore, and he has a new movie out, Capitalism, A Love Story. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot for joining me.
Hey, man, thanks for having me here.
I just want to say one thing before we get going. How about those lions?
It's been 2 years, and if they had to beat somebody, it might as well have been the Washington Redskins. I feel kind of bad for the Redskins, though, because now they're going to be a trivia answer for the next few decades.
And you have Jim Zorn on the hot seat. But you know what? I don't know if you followed this, if you had a chance to check this out, but you know, that whole game follows along the lines of what your movie's been talking about. Because I don't know if you're aware, but the NFL has imposed the old blackout laws and rules for home games. So in other words, if they're not sold out, local TV areas are not allowed to broadcast the games to the fans. So in Detroit and in Jacksonville, you know, with Detroit with 30% unemployment, the fans cannot see any home games. And the NFL, when asked about it, completely turned their backs on the fans of Detroit. It was truly stunning to me. Have you heard about that so far?
Yes, I have. But on some level, it might be best that the people in Detroit aren't able to watch the Lions because if they did, there might be riots in the street.
I hear you. But, you know, it goes back to, you know, part of what your movie's talking about, because when you talk about capitalism, a love story, and obviously greed is a big part of what fuels capitalism. And I was listening to a sports talk show host questioning Goodell, who's the NFL commissioner, and just pleaded with him to show the games to Detroit. I mean, it's, you know, they're making billions of dollars now. And when they first imposed those rules and regulations, they were obviously afraid that TV would undermine the NFL. And Roger Goodell just said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I could do."
Yeah, that's the way it is now. We have the two Americas. One America is the wealthiest 1% that have as much financial wealth as the bottom 95% combined, and that 95% is the other America that's struggling to get by.
Did the movie finish the way you thought it would? Did it change? Did you have some idea in mind when you started? Was it, you know, did it overall just sort of morph into what we have today? Because I know you started this movie a little while ago. How did it stay on course from your original premise?
Well, after the crash, it took a slightly different turn. I started out by exploring capitalism and its immorality and its lack of democracy. But when the crash happened, it revealed a third problem with it, which is that it doesn't work. And Wall Street essentially handed a gift to the people by showing that they all the emperors of Wall Street had no clothes on.
In the movie, you start with the Roman, the whole, you know, the old footage. Was that from the 50s movie?
Yes, that was from an Encyclopedia Britannica 50s movie that they made to show in schools.
You have such a great sense of humor in all your movies. And when you see that, you know, because people don't ever want to admit that an empire could fail, and especially the Roman Empire, which ruled most of the world at that time.
That's correct. But the comparisons between their decline and our decline are quite evident. And there's a part of me that believes that it may just be too late to turn things around. Though I don't know if I'd ever really want to turn it around to what it was, because it never really was what it claimed to be, the American dream. It was really intended for only a few. It was a pyramid scheme, still is, where just the few get to sit on top. Everybody else, the rest of the pyramid's told that if they just work hard enough, they could be on top too. But of course, it's all a lie.
you know, and you hear the conservatives, right? If you just work hard, if you, you know, especially from Bill O'Reilly, right? If you just pull up your bootstraps and you get out there, you too can, you know, be like Bill O'Reilly and make $10 billion a year and promote lies all day.
Right. Yep, that's the rap that they give people, and sadly, too many millions fall for it.
Would you ever go back on Fox again?
Yes, I would go back on Fox. I would not go on Bill O'Reilly or Glass because they use far too much hate speech and call for violence. And I cannot participate in anybody who goes down that road. Well, I would, you know, I've sort of stayed off because I realized that, you know, somebody at the studio told me that whenever I'm on, their ratings go up. So I'm not that interested in helping them sell products and make money for themselves. You know, having said that, I'm ready to tee up Kennedy, I think, pretty soon.
That would be, yes, it would get huge ratings, but it's also really enjoyable to see you, you know, kick them around a little bit because there's, you know, the type of Democrats that go on Fox most of the time are just so weak, and that's the way they like them, so that they can serve them up and kick them around.
Right. Well, then I will make a point during this tour to try and go on one of their shows and give them a little something.
Do it for the blogosphere.
This one's for you.
You know what was really fascinating about the movie also was that FDR footage that you found. And it was called, was it actually called the Second Bill of Rights?
Yes. Yep. And he wanted this filmed. He wanted the American people to see him suggesting that we have the Second Bill of Rights, you know, a right to a home, a right to a job, a right to health care. And he knew he knew that he wasn't long for this world. And unfortunately, the footage got lost. Nobody saw it. And my archival team found it. The Roosevelt story told us it didn't exist. So we found it in an archive in South Carolina.
It was fascinating. It was brilliant. I mean, it again, you know, the things that he talks about is so, it's exactly what you talk about in your movie. Because you talk a lot about your own family and your history. And like you, my father, although, you know, he didn't work for one company, he didn't have much education, but he finally got a union job when he was 40 years old. And through that union job, he was able to support my mother and myself and my sister, and when he retired, he was able to retire with dignity. And that's exactly what happened with your father.
That's correct, right. I know, it's, that's what I say when I think, you know, we may have slid too far down the slope. I'm not sure if, I try to be optimistic about this, but I realize that a lot has gone now, a lot of time has passed, and they've gotten away with literally with murder, and only a huge concerted effort, a movement by millions of people. Let's just say the millions who put Barack Obama into office. If everybody got active again like they were last year, you know, we might have a chance.
You know, that is true, and you would have figured that the, you know, the anger of what happened on Wall Street would have carried over, but instead, you know, we had this right-wing CNBC reporter, Rick Santelli, you know, that was used by the rich and you know, the health insurers to start these tea parties, that they took this sort of anger and made a false populism out of it for the Republicans. Has that surprised you as much as it has me?
No, because I think that historically the right wing in this country and other countries has always used times when working people are hurting, and they seek to manipulate them with fear and scapegoating, into life. So I'm not surprised that they tried to do it this time.
No problem. Listen, Mike, I want to thank you for spending a few minutes.
Oh, no, thank you. And thank you for all the good work you guys do. It's so important.
We're up 24/7 fighting a good fight, and I appreciate it, Michael. Listen, go to your next location, kick it, and we'll be in touch.
All right, yeah, let's do this again.
You got it, buddy.
Okay, bye-bye.